This is the MagicWordPodcast.com.
Hello, this is Scott Wells for the MagicWordPodcast.com. Today is Thursday, the second of September. The Texas Association of Magicians, the TAOM convention, begins tomorrow on the 3rd. However, there are several activities that are preliminary and not really officially supported by the TAOM, but nonetheless are activities that are happening by many attendees who are arriving early. Specifically, let's get started with today. Goodness, we got just a full day of things that are happening. First of all, this is kind of exciting, actually very exciting. We're going to be unveiling a street sign in Kingsland, Texas, which is west of Austin, about an hour outside of Austin, that is in the subdivision called Legendary Estates. And Trixie Bond's husband, Mark Axford, has developed this property, and they have a street that has been designated as Houdini Way. So we're going to have an official unveiling of the street sign party and celebration, I guess, today with several people who are giving some presentations. You're going to be having someone doing a handcuff escape and also just talking a little bit about Houdini and the developers of the subdivision, et cetera. And then finally the unveiling, then going back to where I am right now at Trixie Bond's and Mark Axford's place over here on the lake, which I fondly have referred to as Chateau La Magie. So we'll all be returning here, and we're expecting probably about 30 to 40 people who will be attending this activity here this morning. It'll be again at around 11 o'clock, and then we'll come back here for champagne reception, and then we're going to be having a brunch, and everybody's getting a special souvenir. And I can tell you now, I will post a picture of this on the website or the blog for the MagicWordPodcast.com. There you'll see a picture, many pictures of the thing, the activities that have taken place, but specifically the souvenir everybody's going to be getting is a special Houdini koozie for your soft drink or your water or whatever. Won't fit for a martini, but nevertheless fits on bottles and cans with Houdini as a special tribute and souvenir for the occasion. Then later this afternoon, after we go to Pflugerville, which by the way is the official place where they're going to be hosting the convention, which will be just east of Austin a little bit at the Marriott Hotel. Check in there and then turn around, come back into Austin where we will have a barbecue dinner and also enjoy an evening with Ray Anderson at Lester's Follies. There is a group of, I think, of about 40 of us or so who will be attending that then this evening. And then tomorrow morning, again, these are all things that are outside of the TAOM, but are things that have been promoted by the TAOM for those who wanted to come in early and were available on this Thursday to do that. And then tomorrow morning, on Friday morning, going to be having a collector's meeting, which is really pretty darn cool. And by the time that you hear this, it's not too late. You'll be able to actually tune in to the Zoom meeting to listen to Dr. Eric Colleary talk about some of the items that are in the Ransom Center at the University of Texas that are part of the Houdini ephemera and that massive Houdini collection that they hold there at the university, at the Ransom Center. That was something that was supposed to have been a live event that was going to be open to people who paid to see that today, but due to COVID restrictions, the university has decided no in-person event, so that's only going to end up being a virtual event. So again, that's a Zoom meeting for those worldwide who are interested in this. After you've heard this, you can go to, well, I'll tell you what, I will post that Zoom link on the website. So just go to the blog for The Magic Word podcast.com, and I will post that Zoom link where you can click on that and you can enjoy that. The time will begin at 10:30 a.m. That's GMT minus 5. So that's a central time. Again, 10:30 a.m. central time. Run for about 45 minutes, and that way if you tune in, you can actually ask some questions and ask to see some things a little bit more closely, or you want to, as he's holding something or picking up something, you can ask Dr. Colleary some questions about the Houdini exhibit. And also, we're going to be having Bill Winters talk tomorrow morning as well about some of the greats in magic as part of our collector's breakfast meeting that we're having. Anyhow, a lot of things, activities that are planned right now. As we speak right now, I am at Chateau La Magie and getting ready to head over to Legendary Estates, because here shortly people will start to arrive and we will, they've got the lift ready for everybody to, or for Trixie to be standing on the lift to be able to unveil the sign, because right now there's nothing on it. It's blank. But then with a magical whisk of the Fallard, suddenly there will appear the name Houdini Way. You'll see that. Then also we're going to, again, post that over there at themagicwordpodcast.com. Anyhow, a lot of stuff that's going to be happening. I'm excited. This is really just a prelude to the TAOM. Again, the TAOM is going to be running the 3rd through the 6th. And there will be daily reports, but this is a prelude report. And please come back and join us each day for more activities that will be happening and some convention reports here on The Magic Word. So we are about to begin with the unveiling of the Houdini Way sign. And I have with me here Trixie Bond, since they couldn't name this Trixie Bond Way, I guess. They're going with Houdini Way. Tell me about this. What are we doing here today?
Well, we are doing the magical unveiling of the first and only street in Texas named in honor of Harry Houdini. It's called Houdini Way, located in the Legendary Estates on Lake LBJ in Kingsland, Texas, right on the Colorado River.
Which is west of Austin, about an hour drive.
Yeah, 72 miles northwest of Austin. Mm-hmm. And as you can see, there are about 10 homes in construction right on the Colorado arm of Lake LBJ, and you'll probably hear some of the noise and pounding in the background. Beautiful homes going in, and today we have our county precinct commissioner coming and some city officials from Kingsland and our county.
Another dignitary, some magicians who are coming over from the TAOM, including the fellow who was the past national president of the Society of American Magicians, Dal Sanders, of course, was here.
That's right, and I see a bunch of Austin magicians and Houston magicians arriving, so this is going to be a really cool deal.
It is kind of fun. So this has been the result of how long of a planning and everything?
This is about the start to finish, about 8 years.
8 years.
8 years.
You've had this on your mind for doing this ever since he started developing his property.
That's right, when we bought the property 8 years ago.
Right. So this was, a property that your husband, Mark Axford, had purchased with his partner, and so they're developing that in there.
Yep.
And, some people are already living here, and they've still got some more room if people want to come out, I guess.
Right. They're the first resident is 101 Houdini Way, and she's the first resident. But, like I said, there's 10 other homes just going up right and left here.
Yep. This is very cool. Well, congratulations. I'm looking forward to this. It's going to be a lot
Yay.
Of fun.
Okay.
And then we'll be, after this, joining you over at
my house for
Chateau
lunch.
Le Magie.
And a champagne celebration.
There we go. It's over the Magic Word Podcast. That was Trixie Bond. Scotty out.
Our commissioner here in Burnett County, Jim Luther, is not able to attend, but his wife, Sarah, is here. Sarah, wave your umbrella. And we had great cooperation from day one with our Burnett County representatives. Is Jackie Haynes here? So, Jackie Haynes is the 911 address coordinator, and someone asked me, well, how did you ever come up with the name Houdini Way? Well, look, I'm Mark Axford, but I'm married to Trixie Bond, and so this place had to be named after a magician. So, once we decided Houdini was the one magician that everyone would recognize the name, the next step was to see if there was already a street named Houdini in Burnett County, and there wasn't. In fact, there wasn't even a Houdini street or way or drive anywhere in Texas. And we said, holy cow, is there a Houdini anywhere in the United States? There must be dozens of them. Wrong. There's only one other active street in America with the word Houdini in it, and it's in Henderson, Nevada. But this one is better. Okay, so we named it Houdini, and the rest is history. So We've got some magicians here in the audience today. They're going to tell you some stories about Harry Houdini because he traveled through Texas. A lot of people didn't know this, but it's on the public record, and you're going to learn about it a little bit today. And then we'll have the unveiling after we hear from a few magicians. And at the conclusion, we'll take a ride about 8 miles up the road to the home of Trixie and Mark for a little lunch and refreshment. So I'm now going to turn this over to one of the best magicians in Houston, Scott Wells. See how well he holds that microphone? It's in his blood, right? Take it away, Scott.
Thank you, Mark Axford. Thank you, everybody, for being here. Also, this is a monumental, historic day, not just in Texas, but I think in magic in general. And so I think it's important for some people who are non-magicians, particularly, to know a little bit more about Houdini, who, of course, we even had a stamp that was struck by the U.S. Postal Service by him. So that will tell a little bit about him from a global perspective, and then I'll introduce Kent Cummins, who will tell you more about Houdini's exploits in Texas, actually. So despite claiming that he was born in Appleton, Wisconsin, the magician, escape artist, businessman, aviator, author, and actor, popularly known as Harry Houdini, was born Eric Weiss, that's Eric with a K, and Weiss with a Z, in Budapest, Hungary, to Rabbi Meir Weiss and Cecilia Steiner on March 24, 1874. As was often the case for immigrants, the spelling of the family name was changed to Weiss with two S's, and Eric with a K became Eric with a C-H, whose nickname of Harry became Harry. In 1876, Rabbi Weiss immigrated ahead of his family to the United States and eventually secured a position in a synagogue in Appleton, Wisconsin in 1878. Later that same year, Cecilia Weiss, along with their four sons, Eric, Herman, Nathan, and William, joined Rabbi Weiss in Wisconsin. After losing his position at the synagogue, Rabbi Weiss and his family moved to Milwaukee in 1882, where the family experienced almost constant poverty. In 1887, the family moved to the tenements in New York City. Eric moved around and did a series of odd jobs until meeting Jacob Hyman in 1888. The boys shared an interest in magic, and after reading the memoirs of Robert Houdin, ambassador, author, and conjurer, Eric decided to pursue magic professionally and formed the Brothers Houdini with Hyman in 1891. The name Houdini, obviously, by adding an I to Houdin, or Houdin. The Brothers Houdini performed around New York City in small theaters and dime museums between 1892 and 1894, with occasional engagements in Philadelphia and Chicago, including on the Midway in 1893 Columbia Exposition there in Chicago. I think that's kind of interesting. In spring of 1894, performing solo for a short time as Professor Houdini, then he rebranded the Brothers Houdini with his actual brother, Theo, or Dash Weiss, later known professionally as Hardeen. The partnership didn't last long as Houdini met Wilhelmina Beatrice Rainer, known to everyone as Bess, who became his professional and lifelong partner when the two married after only 3 weeks on June 22, 1894. The Houdinis performed with traveling circuses and medicine shows in terrible conditions throughout 1895, and in an effort to secure a regular salary, Houdini became manager of a burlesque troupe called the Gaiety Girls. During the same year, Houdini began a series of handcuff escape publicity stunts at police stations across the Northeast. The next 2 years were grueling for the Houdinis as the Gaiety Girls troupe and other performance companies they performed with folded. The years between 1897 and early 99 proved no better, as the Houdinis did almost anything to earn income, including performing comedy sketches and, ironically, seances. He even attempted to sell his entire magic act and get a regular job. During this time, however, Houdini continued to perform as handcuff escapes and accept challenges and earned the nickname the King of Handcuffs. The Houdini's lucky break came in 1899. After performing at the Palm Garden in St. Paul, Minnesota, Houdini received an offer to join the Keith Orpheum Circuit from manager Martin Beck. To promote the show, Houdini continued to perform handcuff escapes at police stations and received great attention in local newspapers. In early 1900, the Houdinis embarked on a European tour arranged by Martin Beck, only to find upon arrival that no bookings had been made. Without Beck's help, Houdini, ever the promoter, was able to secure bookings throughout England, Scotland, and Wales to sold-out shows, many of which broke attendance records. His success continued throughout 1904 in venues throughout Central Europe and Asia, Russia. Houdini returned to the United States briefly in 1904, then returned to Europe where he was already an established celebrity. So the Houdini continued performing his illusions, handcuff escapes, and escape acts on land and water throughout the country, and he would almost, and the world almost continuously for the rest of his life, which was cut short at the age of 52 when he died of peritonitis as a result of a ruptured appendix on October 31st, 1926. Kind of interesting to think that he died when he's 52 years old, which is the number of cards in a deck. Also, he was born 26 years before 1900 and died 20 in 1926 after. So kind of split the deck right in half. So that's just a little bit of a background about Harry Houdini, so you understand a little bit more about him globally. As I said, there are so many more things to talk about him being the aviator, the first one to fly Australia, as well as a collector and so many other things. But I'm going to turn this over to my friend Kent Cummins, who is a past president of the Texas Association of Magicians and also can give you some information about Houdini as he toured in Texas.
All right. Thank you, Scott. Good morning. And one thing you didn't mention is that this Halloween will be the 95th year since his death in 1926. So the 100 years after his death is coming up, possibly within our lifetimes, within our memories. I'm holding a book called Houdini's Texas Tours. Last century, that sounds like so long ago. Last century, people really didn't know that Houdini had even performed in Texas. It wasn't part of the books, the anthologies, the articles in magazines. And my friend Ron Cartledge, a member of the local club, found out when he went to a flea market that, Houdini was coming to perform in Austin. That's my city. And that started years of research that produced this book just almost 20 years ago. This is actually number 4 of 52 of a special edition, and I'll tell you who this was autographed to in just a moment. But it's Houdini's Texas Tours, 1916 and 1923. It turns out that Houdini did make two significant tours throughout Texas, most of the major cities, and the details are in this book, which you probably can't buy, but I saw a copy of it at the main library in Austin, in downtown Austin. And there are always copies showing up on Amazon and on used book sites. So if you're interested in Houdini's Texas Tours, I recommend the book. And there's so much more that could be said. But, you know, he was an absolutely amazing performer. And when he and Bess came to Austin, they performed at the Majestic Theater, which is now called the Paramount. And if you go to the Paramount Theater, you'll see some memorabilia on one or two of the walls. You'll see a place where supposedly they put a big thing in the ceiling. Other people say, no, he never did that trick, but it doesn't matter. The important thing is you can buy a Houdini martini at the Paramount Theater because they're embracing the fact that Texas was there. Not only did he perform there, but he stayed at, around the corner, the Driscoll Hotel. And thereby is another story. I'm going to ask my daughter, Carolyn, to bring me another magazine. I'll trade you the book for the magazine, Carolyn. This was 2009, and it has a nice picture story about a guy named Jim Baldoff. Jim Baldoff, by the way, is the one who got book number 4. That's from Jim's collection. And when Jim and I were born the same year, 1943, and when he was a little kid, he made friends with this old vaudeville performer named Jim Bard, who was an acrobat. And it turns out that Jim and his wife were close friends of Harry and Bess Houdini. And so Jim Bard had a bunch of artifacts and stuff. And when he died, many of those went to this kid magician named Jim Baldoff. And like most of our collections, they spent time in boxes and in closets. And then Jim read, early in this century, Jim read a book about Houdini that's talked about his relationship with Jim Bard. And he thought, Jim Bard, oh my gosh, this stuff might be valuable. And indeed, there was a one-of-a-kind Houdini bust. There were posters. There were all kinds of things. But the most important thing of interest to me is Bess Houdini's stage coat, the coat that Bess Houdini had hand-sewed and wore in one of their European tours. And Bess, when she was through wearing it, gave it to Jim Bard's wife. And Jim Bard wound up with it, and Jim Baldoff wound up with it. Now, sadly, we had a broken wand ceremony for Jim just this year, and so he can't be here. Ron Cartledge, who wrote that book, is in rehab from an illness that he had, so he can't be here. But the thing that most interests me about this is the fact that Jim had a press party in 2009 at the Driscoll Hotel, which every major media in the area attended and wrote up because people still are fascinated by Harry Houdini. And during that press party, I found somebody who could fit in Bess Houdini's stage coat, and it's my daughter, Carolyn. Carolyn actually wore the same costume that Bess Houdini made and wore, and we performed a Houdini escape as part of the press party. Well, that dress is now in the secret museum of David Copperfield.
Private museum.
He bought it at auction, and so all of these stories, Houdini is so connected to this area, and it's about darn time that we had a sign recognizing that.
Thank you, Kent.
Oh, and you said the next thing I was going to do was to introduce somebody. Well, but before I do, Dal, where are you?
Over here.
Oh. Dal's got an interesting local Houdini story, local meaning Texas.
Local
Tell
meaning
us real
Texas.
Quick.
The Dallas Magic Club was founded in, chartered in 1924, and Harry Houdini was president of the SAM at the time and on tour again. And he was performing at the Majestic in Dallas, staying at the Fairmont, but he also performed over at the State Fair of Texas. And he hand-delivered our charter that he had signed, our SAM charter, and got pictures. I've got the newspaper articles, and I've got the charter. So if you come to Summer Splash, you can see those things.
Isn't that amazing? Houdini was president of the Society of American Magicians for many years until his death. Now, I have the pleasure...
And Dal also is a past president, national president of the Society of American Magicians as well.
That's true. Something else that you two share. So it's now my pleasure to introduce the next speaker, who happens to be the president of the Society of American Magicians Assembly 206, the Austin Club, and the Texas Association of Magicians, who are having their convention Labor Day weekend, like they've been doing for more than 75 years, and it's going to be in the Austin area again. And so he claims he's Swedish, but he's been in Texas so long now that really he's a Texan. Please help me welcome Bertil Fredström.
Thank you. Hey, guys, I'm not going to hold a speech. I'm going to do magic trick. How about that?
Yeah.
So my stage name is Black Bert, but as Kent said, that's not my real name. My real name is Bertil. And I come from Sweden, and I'm so happy to be in Texas, because in Sweden, it's really cold.
Yes.
In Sweden, winter starts in October and ends in April. Not like over here, where it starts 8 o'clock in the evening and ends 8 o'clock in the morning. So, because this is the inauguration of the Houdini Way, I thought I'll show you an escape from chains and shackles. This is what Houdini was famous for. This is what I will show you. Did anybody bring the shackles? Okay, we'll use mine then. So this is an old style handcuff that Houdini might have used. This is not part of his heritage, but do we have anyone from law enforcement here? Any lawyers? Anybody been in jail? I just need someone to lock me up. What about you, sir? You look like a good, honest citizen. Can you leave the model? What's the name? Jay. Hey, Jay, come on stage here. Everybody give Jay a big hand. So, Jay, this is how this is going to work. We have these chains, and I also have a padlock.
Okay.
So, and I have a key right here.
Okay.
So what I want you to do is I want you to lock me up. Actually, do you want to check this first? Close it and make sure it doesn't open easily. It's a good one, right?
It is a good one.
Okay, so let me open it again. And let me remove my watch.
I'll take that.
<I wish. laughs> So this is how we're going to do this. Actually, we're going to have two padlocks because I have two hands. So can you just hold the other one for now?
Okay.
So this is how we're going to do it. You will take the padlock, the first one.
Okay.
Approximately in the fourth link, 1, 2, 3, 4. If you do the fourth link, that will put the padlock approximately in the middle of my wrist.
It certainly will.
Yes, and now, okay. Don't be nice.
Okay, don't be nice.
Okay, that's tight. Okay.
It's on there.
Yeah, it is.
Okay. I'm sorry.
It's tough. Good. Okay, good. So, to make this a little more interesting, I actually want to ask you to lock my other hand behind my back.
Okay.
That means both hands will be behind my back if you think about it.
Okay. I need to unlock this one first.
Oh, yeah, sorry. Can you do it?
Okay. Should I be nice?
No. Be nice.
I'm going to go down to 3.
Okay.
3 and okay. I'm sorry.
So I forgot to ask you something. Yeah. Do you have a watch with a second hand?
I do.
So you can time me?
I do.
I'm going to try to get out of this in 10 seconds. Now, I'm going to get closer to the audience. I'm going to let you look at this, but I will not let you touch it because if you jank on it, it will hurt me, okay?
Yes.
Does this look good?
Yes.
Let me show the camera. Do you have a camera? So, I'm ready whenever you are, okay?
Okay.
Just so they don't think I'm cheating, can you hold on to the keys? Because sometimes they think that I have second keys, okay? You can check it out one more time before we start to make sure they're well. This is hurts, okay?
I like it.
I said don't junk it, okay?
Okay.
So, I'm ready when you are. Some people go from 1 to 10, some go from 10 to 1. You decide. As long as it's 10 seconds, I'm ready when you are, okay?
Start now. 1, 2, 3.
That's not seconds. That's much faster, okay?
8, 9.
There we go. 10.
10.
Yeah, good. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
And I don't know who is next in the program, but I guess it's ready for the unveiling, right?
I think we're ready for the unveiling. Let's get Trixie Bond back up over here. Trixie? Let's give a big hand for Trixie and... Gary? Hang on.
Well, thank you all for coming, and thanks to Mark and Gary for letting us have this memorial to one of the most famous magicians in history, Harry Houdini. And I hope the residents here appreciate and know what they're living on. And it's appropriate that this is legendary estates, and this is a legendary magician. Yeah, pretty cool thing. And thank you all. We're going to wrap this up shortly and come back to the house for a champagne celebration.
Get a map?
Oh, yeah, there's maps in the back of my car for those of you that need it. So take it away, Gary. Here we go. And it's just so cool that we could do this right in the heart of Texas. Just 72 miles from where Houdini performed. And I got to see Carolyn's costume just recently in the museum, along with some of other artifacts I saw in Blau, France, from the Houdin Museum.
So we've completed the ceremony of the unveiling of the sign, and I have with me someone who's actually going to be one of our speakers tomorrow morning for the collectors. And if you guys show up early enough, you can see this and hear him too. Please welcome Bill Winters. Hello, Bill.
Hey, thank you. Welcome, Scott. Glad to be here.
Glad that you're here then as well. So tell me a little bit about what you're going to be talking about for the collectors meeting tomorrow morning.
So I'm going to present a presentation on Walter Gibson, the man who knew the Titans of Magic. When I was 15, I got to meet Walter. We were in the same SAM assembly in New York. He was about 83 at the time. And for those who don't know, Walter basically, born in 1897, as he put it, he got to know, as a friend, everyone who was big in magic, basically in the golden age of magic, starting from Thurston on down, Houdini, Blackstone, Dunninger, all friends of his, dealers and so forth. So I'll be covering his life there. So forth. Pretty good slideshow, 33 slides you'll get to see, and then you'll get to hear a recording of a lecture that Walter gave back in the late 70s, and he's going to give his reflections on Houdini.
Well, there you go. And, of course, Walter Gibson was best known as, was he the writer of?
He was the writer of The Shadow. Series novels put out over 1.6 million words, he wrote. It was supposed to be a quarterly publication, and it was so popular, the first one sold out so quick, it went to a monthly, and then it went to a weekly publication. So he's well known for that. And there are actually four people who wrote under the name of Maxwell Grant, but he was the first one. And that name actually came by combining two of his dealer friends, Max Holden and U.F. Grant. And that's where you get the Maxwell Grant from.
Oh, interesting. Okay. Yeah. Did not know that. I've got one of the posters that he had signed along with Steranko. That was the Norgel poster.
Right, yes. So they had the Norgel poster, which I have one of those as well. Mm-hmm. He did a number of books. He was the ghostwriter for Thurston, Blackstone, Houdini, and Dunninger. And then he also put out over 50 magic books himself.
Yeah.
So under his own name.
So for those of you who are listening to this before the convention begins, you want to make sure to get in early enough to hear this. I had mentioned earlier that we're going to be having a Zoom lecture, if you will, or a Zoom presentation by Dr. Eric Colleary, who is the curator of the Houdini artifacts at the Ransom Center at the University of Texas. And he will begin at 10:30, whereas your portion will begin at 9?
9, just prior to, and I will end, and then we'll go into the Ransom.
Yeah.
Piece of it.
So there we go. Yeah. So be sure to get here early enough in order to see that and check in to the hotel, check into the convention, and then check out Bill Winters. Thanks, Bill, very much. Looking forward to it.
Thank you, Scott. Appreciate it.
You enjoyed this afternoon, by the way. Was this kind of fun, this, by the way, this presentation?
It was great. I said it was a poor levitation, though, of Trixie. As you didn't see, she was lifted up on a forklift, and we could see the forklift, which is not good for a magic levitation. So. But no, it was great to be part of that, and very interesting. And glad Houdini finally got his due in Texas.
There we go. Yep. So for the Magic Word Podcast, that was Bill Winters. Scotty out. Following our show at Esther's Follies, Ray Anderson was responding to some questions from the people in the audience. Specifically, we had about a group of 40 magicians from the Texas Association of Magicians who were in attendance that evening. It was a rather full house, probably had 100 and, I don't know, some people there as well. But after they had left, then Ray spent some time talking with us, and I had on my recorder, so you can hear what Ray Anderson had to say after Esther's Follies.
And with the five in their sixth season, so almost 40 years, and I started with them, and I was a guest star, so I came in and went. I wasn't here all the time. And you may know Turk Pipkin.
Yes.
Turk was performed here in the early days as well, the very early Esther's Follies, as well as, does anybody know Mario Lorenz? Mario was a juggler that that did stuff here, and Mario is the one, we were friends, and he's the one that brought me in to Esther's. And my first performance at Esther's was very, don't call us, we'll call you afterwards. I was doing very standard stuff, and so I went back to my dorm room. I was going to school at UT. I was a theater major there, and I wrote my very first little routine, which you could never do now, Sig and Dress, where I had a woman from the audience come up, and I put my hand up her dress. I can't believe I did that. What is it? Maya Angelou says, when you know better, you do better. So anyway, I went home, and I wrote this thing specifically for Esther's with the idea of making fun of people outside the window. And before that, they had done things like you see sketches and stuff where people pop up, but nobody just sort of stood there and made fun of people as they walked by and really interacted with them. And I was kind of the first one to do that. And I would wait until I had my hand up this poor woman's dress, and I'd put up a little roller shade, and there were like four windows, more windows than what we have now, and I would wait till some guy was standing right in that one window, and I would pull the roller shade down, and for some strange reason, like, they wouldn't, like, just look around it at the beginning, so it just became, like, really funny how long it took before finally they realized they could just look around the other side of it, and that was sort of one of the first things that I ever did. Any other? I'll answer anything very truthfully tonight.
What year was this building?
This particular building goes way, way back. It was JJ's Tavern back in probably the 40s is when that first started. This little area, which is backstage now, was, and then later on in the 70s, this was like a live exotic strip show. And but where the Velveeta room is now and part of the upstairs dressing room, Cactus Pryor's dad had a theater here in the 30s. And so Cactus, his dad ran a movie theater, and that was sort of what the first building was here. And then the rest of it sort of piled on as you went. But we've been here, gosh, over 30 years. So, yeah.
Obviously, the cast changes out a lot of their skits and everything, their songs. How often do you change out your magic?
I try to have one or two things. I think probably anybody who hasn't been here in a year saw several new things tonight just because I was off for a while. And
What were you doing?
You know, my robot thing that I used to do. Well, you couldn't do that during a pandemic anyway. It was down in the audience with people's faces. But I had decided I was going to retire that anyway. And so I try to have one or two new things. And the show is ever-changing as well. It's not like we just stop and do a brand new show. It's whatever's in the news or whatever we write, and it kind of changes over time. And then some things stay that are classics, like Patsy Cline, and I think that Sam I Am is almost always in, kind of a crowd favorite.
Who owns Esther's Follies?
It is owned by Shannon Sedwick, who plays Patsy Cline, and her husband, Michael Shelton. And they were the original owners from the very, very beginning. And when it first started, it was just a bunch of old hippies that got together at a pool hall, which is only now three doors down from where we are now. We've had four locations on the street over the years. But the original location is three doors down where the reggae bar is. And it was a pool hall. And they started the show by just building a little stage in the only little area that there could be, and it happened to be in front of a window. So when they originally did it, they put a curtain up over the window, and the people sat on the pool tables to watch the show. But it was an instant success from the very beginning, and they passed the hat. It wasn't like you paid to get in or anything, and you also entered through the alleyway. Because that was the only entrance that you could get in for some reason. Same alley back here that people would line up and go in. And that's the first place I started 3 months before it burned down. It burned down in their sixth year. And that was the original Esther's Pool. And then after that, we moved to the Ritz. A lot of you will know the Ritz Theater, which has been there forever and ever and ever. And they were there for a time. And then we were where Coyote Ugly is now for a few years. And they had the windows again there. And then we moved here easily, I think, about 30 years ago. So we bought this building about 30 years ago.
Hell of a show.
Well, thank you. I appreciate that. Yeah. I appreciate all of you coming, too.
Do you keep track about how many shows actually they've done here?
I have no idea how many shows. I don't know. We only take off 3 weeks out of the year, so we're performing the rest of the time. I guess you could add that over 46 years and tell me how many shows it is. It's five shows a week, although we've come back with only four shows a week to start because our late show crowds, especially this time of year, have been soft. And so we cut out our second show Friday so we could make our audience bigger for Friday first show. And but we'll go back. This is traditionally our slowest time of the year because school starts right then and everybody's busy. So it was that on top of this new surge. And about 3 weeks ago, we saw our numbers start to go down. Although this week, for the first time, our numbers went back up. Maybe that was because so many of you came. I don't know. So it was very nice. Yeah. So we'll struggle through and like we always have. And there's not much that can keep us from doing a show here. So it was very interesting being off for 15 months and coming back. But we kept our entire cast together. Didn't lose a single person out of our cast. Yeah. So, yeah. Cool. All right. If there's no more questions, I'll lead you guys around. What we'll do is... Let's do the picture first. Yeah. Everybody come on stage.
All
All right, let me just say up front for this particular segment, we have a discussion with Michael Amar as we were in the car returning to our hotel, and there was someone sitting next to him who was having another discussion. So please try to focus on the discussion that Michael was having and on his words, and don't be distracted by the other voice that was beside him. I apologize, not much I could do about that. I didn't want to be rude and say, hey, quiet, we're recording a podcast. So anyhow, you get the idea. And I think you will be able to keep focused on what Michael has to say. You may have to go back and listen to it a second time and keep focus on him. Anyhow, sorry, but enjoy. All right. Right now I have with me then Mr. Michael Amar, which is kind of interesting. We're actually in a car heading back from the from Esther's Follies. And he is one of the people who is a talent. Actually, you lived in Austin for a while, too.
I did, for 6 years.
We loved it. And was Hannah going to school at the time?
Yep, for 2 years of that
art school.
Mm-hmm. For interior design.
Okay.
And his normal pressure is like 30. Which had a lot of art in it, of course.
Yeah.
But it was a wonderful opportunity to see Ray Anderson perform such a brilliant performance. It was my first time to see Esther's Follies, so it was a real
treat. That was your first time?
Yep.
Okay, so give me your impression. What did you think about the whole show? I mean, not just Ray, but you know, everything else.
Oh, wonderfully contemporary. You know, they're talking about stuff that's in the news this week.
Mm-hmm.
You know, which is really cool.
And
the magic is, yeah, there's never a dull second in the show.
Yeah.
I mean, there's never a dull second through the whole thing. It was really great.
Very good. That's exactly right. They are very topical every week. Whenever they rehearse everything, they kind of look at the news. And, you know, for the weekend, I think they take a break, for like Sunday, basically. And the rest of the week, they're kind of in the writer's room and putting things together.
Well, it's very obvious that it's very contemporary. It's right out of the headlines. So that's really great.
Now, you've seen a lot of other shows, and you've seen, but you haven't seen Ray perform,
like
I guess, before, right?
No, first time.
Yeah, and what are your impressions over there?
I mean, honestly,
He's an excellent performer.
Yeah.
I mean,
real pro.
You know, not just, stage presence, but,
we didn't ask him. We just said,
you know,
what,
comedy,
like,
really great timing, and everything's beautifully choreographed, great music, you know, original equipment, illusions.
You can see how the theater's actually built for those performers, too, you know.
Yeah, it's really great. I mean, some of the illusions filled the stage, and the stage is 3 feet away, you know.
Uh-huh.
So it was really great.
I'm surprised the number of years you were here, because it's been running for a long number of years, and you were here for 6 years and never saw it.
I know.
You probably heard about
those were really busy years for me.
Well, you although you lived in Austin, you traveled a lot back then.
Yeah, those were really busy years.
Yeah. Now you're in Florida. You're not retired. What are you doing in Florida?
Well, you know, not retired, but not as aggressive as I was, you know, when I was really out there.
One guy that was arguing with someone on the phone,
but,
guessing a girlfriend or someone that refused.
Yeah, still staying busy and still performing. And working on these curriculums, you know, like with the Discover Magic, you know.
Right.
You got the one that just is currently available is Magic Works U. You know, Discover Magic was for 8 to 12-year-olds. And Magic Works U is for 12 and over.
Okay.
So it's a little more advanced.
So do they have to take one before the other?
No, not necessarily. And, you know, the guys running Discover Magic now have developed four different curriculums and a lot of these students go from one to the next, you know.
Yeah, they love it.
They take all, every one of them, I mean, which is really great.
Now, this has been running for how many years?
6 years now.
Okay. So I was asking whether there were some people perhaps who decided they've gone on to college and have studied theater and art and perhaps decided to become a professional magician.
Yeah, some of these guys now are starting to grow up, and it's very interesting. You know, the way it's designed, you really have a great respect for magic when you go through this. So, and whether they become magicians or not, you know, they'll always have soft spot in their heart for magic. You know,
right.
A lot of times, in the corporate world, you're performing for CEOs that mm-hmm. loved magic when they were kids, you know, and now they have a chance to hire magicians. So it's always good.
That's a good point. Yeah, because they understand also what people, the magicians, have kind of gone through and how that it really is an art, it's a performance art that they have studied themselves and they can appreciate. And we need to hire a professional, and a magician comes to mind.
Yeah.
So they're put in the right position. That's interesting.
Yeah.
And also, whenever they're young, usually that's at a certain age, when you're around 10 or 11, I think is when you start to decide, this is something I'm really interested in doing, and you stick with it longer. In other words, when you're younger, I think you're running from like soccer to baseball to football to basketball or whatever it is.
The 8 to 12 age range is when parents are investing the most and trying to find
what it is,
what their kids, what really resonates with them.
Mm-hmm.
So they try a lot of different things. So that's a good age. That was a good age range to target.
And so the next group up beyond that is the one really where they start to get more serious.
Mm-hmm. 12 and up. And I just did 20 students with Penguin taking Magic Works U.
Okay.
You know, so those are adults, you know, beginners for sleight of hand.
Wow.
And my fifth class is Sunday. I have to do it from here someplace. You know, find a place to do a Zoom session.
We're doing it
Sunday
via Zoom, I guess, over the last year here.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Have you been doing any? You haven't been doing international travel, but I guess have you done any travel much at all until you heard just recently?
Just starting in June. You know, everything started back up in June for me. I, you know, just during the pandemic, once got to go to Berlin. They pulled some strings to get. It was like the 100th anniversary of the German Magic Circle or something like that.
And they brought you over?
Yeah. They got a special cultural exchange visa. So I didn't have to quarantine for 2 weeks and stuff like that. So it was really cool. And that was a really neat.
Did you lecture and perform, I assume?
Mm-hmm. But they were under these restrictions, so they had like clear plastic panels that could, if you had somebody up on stage, they had this with a clear plastic panel between you with a little hole so that they could like pick a card through
right?
it.
Yeah, that is funny.
Yeah, so they and they were socially distanced and also everybody was spread out, so it was a really big room.
Yeah.
And
then you add the language differential also, if you were having to wait for a translator.
Yeah, so it was
challenging.
Yeah, it was fun. But you could tell that, you know, they were just starting into another, it was like last November. So they were just starting to shutdown.
Right now, into the future, like beginning of next year? Or you going to be at FISM or in Quebec? Or?
Surprisingly, between now and then, September, October, and November are really busy. Haven't only booked a couple of things for 22, but I assume that 22 will be
we'll
a great year. Yeah.
Well, things you're doing.
I think there's like a pent up demand for.
Oh my gosh! Yes.
Stuff.
Yeah.
You know,
people are just like a pull back, like a slingshot, just getting ready to be shot out.
Just like after the 1918 pandemic, they had the Roaring Twenties. You know,
that's right. You did have the Roaring Twenties. Good point. Good analogy.
Yep.
So we could have, I guess.
So the Roaring Twenties again.
The Roaring Twenties again. That's a very good point. So are the things you've got coming up private and corporate events, or are they going to be anything that magicians will see you someplace at conventions?
There'll be a few conventions. I'll be at the Trix convention.
I'll be there,
That's in November, right?
In November, like the 12th or something, I think, Scott Robbins has got.
Mm-hmm.
I've never been to that, have you?
No, be my first time.
Yeah.
And the Atlanta Harvest I'll do at the end of September. Mm-hmm. And what else? Magic wise, I think we Hannah and I might do It's Magic over Thanksgiving. The Spirit Cabinet. She knows more about it than I am, but they have been in touch with her. So I think that might happen over Thanksgiving.
And that's going to be, you say, the It's Magic show?
It's Magic
out in LA?
Show. It's Magic, yeah.
That's the one that Mill Larson produces,
mm-hmm.
kind of a thing?
Mm-hmm.
That's in conjunction with, like, several other magicians. And is it just in L.A., or do you travel with that?
I'd be, like, Santa Barbara and L.A. and I think three performances at different places. I'm not sure where the third is. Maybe, I don't know, actually.
Have you been practicing much with that Spirit Cabinet during COVID?
No, actually, I thought we would, but it turns out we didn't. But, you know, because that takes a whole room.
Yeah, yeah, that's a good point.
And so it's like, okay, well, we're going to start having company.
If you put it in the garage, you can't put the car in. Yeah.
Right, so, but we had, we're ready to perform at the Magic Castle, and it's Magic last March. We were supposed to start at the Magic Castle March 16th, and it closed the 15th of last year.
2020.
20, right.
Yeah.
The week that they shut down was the week we were supposed to perform at the Magic Castle. It was really disappointing because we'd, you know, had all our ducks in a row and all that. And that's kind of a shame we didn't get to do it. But
but you're going to be coming back to the castle and doing that eventually, you think, sometime soon, maybe 22?
I would really like to do it at the castle. I would like to do that in conjunction with It's Magic, you know, to do the two together.
Oh, while you're there? Okay, makes sense. While you're already there and you got everything out there, too.
Yeah, and they just started back to hiring full-time stuff. They were doing some strange things before, like maybe just video magicians or something like that at the castle. But now it's they're up and running again, and... Yeah, so it'd be neat to go out.
Have you looked at expanding that, including more of like what Glenn used to do with the big mask, I mean the metal mask?
You know, that's it's a really good act.
It really was.
And the thing about it is, with mentalism, you're just telling people about themselves.
That's right.
You know, and
that's
what they've
really told you.
Interesting
you're
to them.
It.
Yeah, but what's interesting, and this fooled me about is that that I didn't realize, because it looks like he's telling everybody something different.
Hmm.
You know?
Yeah.
I thought everybody got the same questions. They don't.
Right.
Everybody gets different questions.
Mm-hmm.
So it looks like you're now, you know, going deeper.
You're asking about your dog or someone else who helped, you know,
right? Right. So other things are coming to mind.
Right.
And so as far as anybody else knows, wow, he's telling them other stuff.
Yeah.
You know, wow, you got that guy's phone number, you know.
Yeah.
And, so that's an interesting little subtlety that gives that act, you know, keeps that act interesting to the audience.
So that's not something that you want to do? You'd rather just stick with the spirit cabinet? And
Yeah. Well, there's the legacy thing with the spirit cabinet primarily.
Of course, of course.
You know, I mean, it's... Not many chances to be a fourth generation.
That's true. Francis right now is what, 84?
80.
I don't want to push her. Okay, she's 80.
and she's doing, we're going to do the Gypsy Mystery.
Are you?
Saturday
the two
night.
Of you?
Yeah.
Or are you going to do it with Hannah? You're going to do it with Francis?
I'm going to do it with Francis.
How nice is that?
Yeah.
Cool.
And so we've been doing that the last couple of weeks, you know. Tying up my mother-in-law.
Now, are you going to be doing that like the same method that she and Glenn used to do?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, because
mm-hmm.
I know that they taught that on video and everything too.
Mm-hmm.
So
mm-hmm.
I didn't know if she had refined that or changed it up a little bit over the years.
You know, we might be doing one little part of it a little different.
Okay,
and I. Primarily because she couldn't remember exactly.
She needs to go back and watch the tape.
And we couldn't find a VHS player. So magicians are the last people in the in the country with VHS machines.
You know, that's true.
We couldn't find a VHS machine. So it's like, okay, let's let me get the Tarbell here. Okay, here's how we'll do it. You know.
I understand, yeah.
So there was a little modification.
Well, that's going to be just a great callback because she probably hasn't performed that. In a number of years, this is going to be a very special.
10 years, maybe.
10 years.
10 years,
okay.
Probably.
It may have been at the TAUM last time.
Yeah, yeah.
You know?
Yeah, I think Glenn passed in 2011 or so. So, mm-hmm. yeah, it may be 15 years since she's done it.
And she probably won't be doing it again. This may be her last.
This will probably be her last performance.
There we go. Well, that's going to be
isn't
special.
Isn't that interesting, you know?
Yeah.
And her first one here was 58 years ago.
With their dad.
1963, she was performed at the TAOM.
Okay. With Willard the Wizard?
With Willard.
Okay.
I mean, that's going to present a little problem with the elevators. That's pretty cool.
Yeah, that is very cool. Yes.
You know, not many people have been doing anything for 58 years.
No, that's for sure. Well, Michael, thanks very much. That was great kind of
running through all this. Well, it's nice to see you, Scott. You really keep your finger on the pulse of magic, and That's a really wonderful thing.
Well, I appreciate you being friends for all these years.
We go back quite a ways.
Quite a ways. Back to Hawaii. When was that, 81?
Oh, my gosh, that was like 81.
Wow. So what would that be, like 40 years now?
40 years, officially.
40 years friendship. There we go. So, for the Magic Word Podcast, that was Michael Orr, Scotty out.